we thought that the only way to do this is to start it with a clean sheet of paper and really focus on what we call disruptive simplicity. When you don't have any of the baggage that you are carrying of the decades of debt that you have created, it gives you a free hand to simplify beyond belief, to standardize the design and more.
Welcome to Technovation. I'm your host, Peter High. My guest today is Pankaj Patel. Pankaj is the co-founder and chief executive officer of Nile, a company that's defined a new category, network as a service, which features built-in security, automation, and continuous monitoring for maximum performance. Pankaj thinks of this company as a do-over of sorts. He was previously the chief development officer at Cisco, in charge of more than 30,000 engineers and over $38 billion in revenue. In his many collaborations with executives at the largest enterprises and service provider organizations, the seeds of the idea that would become Nile germinated until he made the leap to start his new venture roughly 5.5 years ago. I look forward to hearing more about this journey through this conversation. Pankaj, welcome. It's great to see you as always.
Thank you, Peter.
Well, Pankaj, I do want to, if you don't mind, go back to your time at Cisco. As I mentioned in the introduction, you spent a lot of time with the largest companies in the world. You spoke with them a lot about their pain points, their evolution, ways in which they were taking advantage of technology trends and the like. And I wonder, tell us a bit about some of those conversations and the impressions that you got and about the challenges that were expressed through those conversations that became the seeds of a new company.
Well, thank you, Peter. Actually, that's a great question, number one. And that was how the journey started, honestly. I was very fortunate to be able to interact with very large service providers globally, as well as very large enterprise customers globally. And that actually taught me a lot of things along the way. Even managing engineering, I used to travel on an average about 10 plus days a month, and sometimes as high as 13 to 14 days. But at the same time, it really taught me a treasure worth of information that I carried with me, mainly about the experiences that the customers had, right? And I think they're pretty common in the industry, whether it's with one vendor or the other vendor, right? And what you find with the major customers is that one of the things that they observed and they saw was the proliferation of one too many SKUs for every single product type. And along with this came the different software revision levels, right? They were hand in hand. So to them, it was creating a giant complexity for them to manage. And they used to sometimes tell me that they feel like as if they're walking around the cereal aisle in a grocery store and having to pick on a bunch of cereals, like, which brand is what and which granola they should buy or something. And so that gave me a pretty interesting insight into why something has to be simplified dramatically, number one. Number two, I also would hear from them to say, some customers would say, hey, by the way, I only use a portion of the code that is sitting there in a router or a switch, right? And there are a lot of features. You provide incredible value in terms of so many features, but it has little to no value for me, right? So that always stayed with me to say how much of what we deliver, what we produce, is truly being used by the customers. A lot of this would also provide opportunities for the manual intervention and the management that would happen manually. So a lot of error-prone environment, which was getting created because of this, there was a lot of opportunities for customers to complain to me about the visibility and the control that they would have. They would tell me about the vulnerability areas that they are seeing because of the manual touch that their IT staff and more partners and others can have into every single aspect of daily life. Also, when it came to a lot of workflows, they found that the workflows were not exactly efficient the way they needed to be. And so, and the list literally would go on. One of the things that actually stuck with me was the troubleshooting. And this was a very painful reminder every single day to me and to my team, which is a lot of times when a customer takes a hit in their environment, their very first job is to make sure that the service is brought up very quickly. In doing so, sometimes a lot of hardware either is reset or replaced, knowing fully well that hardware may not be the issue. And in more cases than not, it was not. It's a software issue. However, doing so, you would lose all the crash information and more, which would require going back to the customer and asking for a maintenance window to recreate the same issue that they had a time before. You know, all of this sound like plenty, and it is plenty, right? You know, this is what shaped my thinking to say, there has to be a better way. There has to be a simpler way. And that's what it brings me to Nile. Because, you know, along with my co-founders, we thought about it and we say, you know, is there a better way that we can simply hide the complexity, right? And by the way, I have to say, in my prior job, and not only just us, but our competitors at that time, everybody had tried to do their own version of modularizing and, you know, providing whatever other means that they wanted to address some of the issues, provide some level of automation, not quite the closed loop automation and more. And I would say it came to my realization that this is not going to be feasible or possible by the incumbents. So it brings me truly to Nile. And this is where we thought that the only way to do this is to start it with a clean sheet of paper and start from scratch and really focus on what we call disruptive simplicity. And when you don't have any of the baggage that you are carrying of the decades of debt that you have created in the industry, it gives you a free hand to simplify beyond belief, to standardize the design and more. And this is what I learned. I know it's a long story, but I'm trying to pack before starting Nile 32 years of being in networking, right? So
that's really great. I love that overview. You mentioned co-founders. One of those is John Chambers, who is a longtime colleague of yours at Cisco, of course, an iconic chief executive officer of that organization. Talk a bit about, if you don't mind, your relationship with John and this opportunity to start something with him.
Well, John is an icon and legend in the industry. And more importantly, he's a dear friend and he's a true friend. And we always say to each other that friends for life, actually, and we are. We share a lot of things together. We do a lot of things together. We know our families very well. We care about each other, about not just about our careers and where we have been, but more importantly about our lives, our children and grandchildren and more. And John is a visionary. One of the things John and I, we both learned along the way was we have a parallel track of a career, in a sense that, and I always say this tongue in cheek, that I'm a few years younger than John. So I always call him my older brother, but older and wiser. But like, you know, and I mean it sincerely. He started his career at IBM and then at Wang Labs. I started my career working on IBM mainframes. And then I worked on the computer companies back in Boston in 70s and 80s. And companies like Digital Equipment Corporation, Prime Computer, Apollo, and more. And, you know, it's a stark reminder None of these companies exist anymore, right? There's a reason, right? When you look back, when you think back, you say, what happened, right? And one of the things that John and I always talked about, and he taught me, was he says, Pankaj, always focus on market transitions. Do not drive your strategy by looking at the competitors. He said, you always want to pay attention to competition, but keep them in your rearview mirror. Focus on the market trends and transitions and then anticipate them and invest accordingly. So when before we started the company, we were looking at the market transitions, and there were three areas that came to our mind, which actually shaped a journey where we are today, which is number one, there was emergence of the cloud and IoT on the market side. And by the way, people don't realize that AWS came out in 2006. And when it did, it was even meant for serving its own e-commerce business before they really brought it out commercially, right? And it went through a pretty interesting cycle of adoption. But, you know, there were a lot of people resisting it. I mean, you will hear, you will remember about the shadow IT and, gee, my data is going to be compromised once it leaves my premise and more. Today, you don't even think about it, right? But that's the journey that we went through. Second one is about IoT and emergence of IoT. You know, like, you know, thinking about IT and the IoT world remaining completely separate. Today, you know, there are lots of IoT devices in every walk of life, and we have to find a way to deal with them. We have to find a way to deal with their security and more. So that was one dimension. Second one was about the emergence of AI, ML, and softwares. Today, a day doesn't go by without hearing about NVIDIA or ChatGPT. I mean, like, are you kidding me? Like, you know, and so it has become every talk in every coffee shop in Silicon Valley and more, right? Every single day about AI. But, you know, when you go back, you know, 6, 7 years ago, when we were thinking about Nile, you know, it was still in pretty early stage. I mean, people were thinking about some level of automation, but not to the degree that we are witnessing today, right? And then last but not the least, even when we were starting the journey, people were not that ready, but they were beginning to embrace anything as a service model, right? So we saw that people were accepting something on the Zoom front and something on the Okta and something on Salesforce. People were not afraid to consume it per user as a service per month. So these three major market transitions gave us a hope that we can overlay that against a 40-year-old industry and industry which is insanely capital and the operations intensive, that there is a hope and there is something that we can enable and we can afford to change. That's where we are. That's what brings us to the journey of Nile.
Yeah, honestly. Sure. Very, very interesting. Another great overview. Thank you so much for that. I want to get into this notion of network as a service. So you talked about the rise, the ascent of the as a service model across many important companies. You mentioned several just a moment ago, Zoom, Okta, Salesforce as examples. Talk a bit about the idea of network as a service, as this is a category you're pioneering, essentially.
Yeah, you know, when we were thinking about network as a service, to me and to my co-founders, service is truly the new product, right? And we really wanted to mold this in a way where AI truly drives the closed loop automation, because we saw this as a major hole in the way the networks were today. There were bits and pieces, but it was not really truly driving the closed loop automation. And this is where we realized that at the end of the day, data is the secret ingredient for what we are doing and to AI, right? So when we thought about all of this, we say there is something that we can do here, which is so different, right? And at the end of the day, customers want to see the outcomes. Customers are interested in something which will simply work, so, simply delivered, as whatever form that you want to call it. But to us, it's a service that which is orchestrated, uninterrupted, and it just works. Because, every facet of our life is dependent on connectivity and networking today, right? Whether you are a healthcare professional, whether you are a financial services a consultant, whether you are in a higher ed, or whether you are in carpeted offices and more, right? Doesn't matter what walk of life. I mean, the kind of applications that we use today, like Uber and DoorDash and others, I mean, none of this would be possible without being connected to Wi-Fi and more, right? So we knew that every walk of our life depends on it. What that means is that it simply cannot go down, period, right? It has to be so resilient. It has to stay up, right? How do you do that? And this is where, by the way, you will remember that for the old optical networks, where they were designed completely redundant, and how they were orchestrated was a different story. That actually did not quite carry forward into the world of IP as we know it today, right? And services, networks do go down. Services do go down. They suffer outages. And we have seen this with many of them. We have seen them with some of the major companies from time to time at time and time again, right? And so that was the focus that we had. I mean, look, in California this year, we had so many pretty tough storms, and they drenched California or snow in the Sierras like there's no tomorrow. And when any of these Pineapple Expresses would come through either Northern or Southern California, what is the first thing that here locally PG&E would tell us? They'll say, hey, by the way, make sure that all your hand devices are all charged up. Think about it. I mean, when did that ever happen before? What they're saying is that because of the wind and other conditions, you might lose power. But if you do, you want to be connected. You don't want to lose your connectivity just in case, right? That shows us to the importance of service. And when we were thinking about this, we said, you need to have the mindset to start in the right direction. You cannot design like a product as a product and say, oh, you're just going to orchestrate that as a providing the service. It brings a very different mindset from architecture to the trade-offs that you make every single day, right? Because we enforce to a team day one. By the way, this is something that we did very differently when we were hiring. By the way, we have a very senior team, very seasoned team. On an average, the team is team has about 20 to 25 years of experience from all the big companies that you know of, and the people who have designed and delivered 4 to 5 generations of products in their lifetime before. When they would join us, we would ask them some basic questions. And this was part of indoctrination into our way of thinking, And because honestly, it's a new religion. And we all know changing religion is very hard. Human beings have proven that over centuries as to how difficult it is, right? And it truly is, because mindset change is not easy. And we have recent examples through the cloud emergence. It was not easy for them, right? So we would ask ourselves the question to say, because of, once again, my prior experience to say, how much of the code truly gets used? So we will say, before you design any piece of hardware, software, or firmware, or anything on the application side, ask yourself a question. Do you really need this? Is this needed or is this nice to have? Focus on what is truly needed to deliver a service, okay? Number one. Number two, after you have decided that you are going to need this, simplify it to the nth degree, okay? This is where the concepts of no configuration for networking elements, getting rid of a lot of layer two, as we know, right? We don't have concepts of VLANs or whatnot in what we do. Think about it. Today, there are probably about a dozen or so architectures for the campus. There are 15, 16 protocols. When you multiply all of this with the number of SKUs I was talking about earlier, with all the software revision levels and all the knobs for every protocol that you can think of, you truly end up in a snowflake as every customer, right? So we said, hey, this is what makes it difficult. So simplification is the key. Then after that, we said, let's automate everything that we are doing. Doing all of this, we were able to automate, simplify and automate 95% of the usual things people do every day and they encounter in the IT shop. But we had to bring that level of fundamental thinking at our engineering architecture, design, and deployment level. And we, by the way, and I talked about data earlier, we made sure that we had consistency and integrity of the data throughout the entire journey, from site survey, installation, day minus one, day zero, day plus one, that we are going to be able to leverage that same consistent and integrated data for the entire journey to be able to support the service forever. And that's what brings, and by the way, I talked about 95% automation, even the 5% we keep on automating every single day, but we provide what we call X-ray visibility in order to root cause and fix the issue very quickly. And this is the beauty because of the tremendous amount of monitoring data, leveraging the data and AI and ML, we are able to push the network to be able to self-maintain itself so it can provide at the end of the day, the goal is the service has to stay up. It cannot go down. You cannot do this with the product mindset. It's simply not feasible and not possible. This is what we had to do in order to create the true service offering.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I wanted to ask you also, you've navigated through so many technological transformations across your career. Artificial intelligence obviously is as hot a trend these days as it comes, and by extension, of course, generative AI. I wonder if you could take a moment and provide some reflections. I mean, yours is a career and a domain, series of domains that you've been involved with, such that you've been cognizant of and influenced by and influenced artificial intelligence for quite some time. Talk a bit about where we are in its advancements and how that's also impacting some of the ideas that you're pursuing.
So, the industry has been pretty receptive, and which is no surprise to me. And I think IT industry benefits from it and is going to continue to benefit in many, many areas, such as the monitoring function, right? It's going to, how do you manage the tickets? Monitor every single day, every single aspect of what you go through inside the shop? How do you impact the cybersecurity posture? How do you do the data management? How do you provide the network optimization? How do you provide the orchestration and more? So there are every single way of every aspect, I should say, of IT is being impacted by AI today and in some form or the other. And it's going to continue its impact forever. A lot of the complex tasks that people do today, either manually or otherwise, slowly but surely, they are going to get automated. It's a matter of time. It's going to have a huge impact. I tell people that it is already having an incredible impact on my own software engineers. They're able to boost their productivity in a major way. There is a, you know, we talked about a lot of simplification. And, you know, when I talk about simplification, we have truly Apple kind of simplification in terms of we have leveraged a lot of lessons from what Apple has done. But, like, for example, no manuals and whatnot. But I think automation plays a very different role, right? And you could not do the, you could not leverage the power of AI because to me, that's synonymous with the closed loop automation. And once again, data is front and center to everything that we do. So I think it is, it's great that the industry is doing all of that. I think for us, clearly, we have created the AI apps, and we do that for providing the lifecycle management, right? And we impact that in three major areas. We impact that for, we provide a tremendous automation for the IT admins. We also provide incredible visibility to the IT users. And then we also provide incredible tools, what we call the autopilot to our production network engineering, right? And if I can talk about that for a second, Peter, when we started the company, we had, I think in the beginning, a couple of years ago now, we had about a few deployments. And so even with few deployments and with all the automation that we have, we said, you know, we need to provide the online support. It goes without saying. Now, we don't take hits. It's unusual, but you know, we want to make sure that we can, when we do, we can have the online support. So we created the production network engineering group. It's a small group and very small group which follows the sun 24 by 7. We have a few people in here and a few people in India, a small group of six people. And today we have a couple of hundred deployments. And guess what? We have not increased that team by one human being because we didn't need to. That is the power of AI and automation and the beauty that we have brought, that we are able to leverage the like, you know, our AI application for the autopilot and for the production engineering so that they can provide an incredible service delivery to our partners and to our customers for any of the network operations that they have to offload, right? And then we do the same thing or similar thing for the IT admins, right? For the service outcomes that they have to both orchestrate. So the incredible visibility and the control we provide to them, which is truly tremendous. And we get a lot of positive feedback on that front. And then last but not the least, the co-pilot for the end user. This, by the way, between these two co-pilots for the IT admin as well as for the user, has been responsible for a dramatic, I mean, dramatic reduction in number of IT tickets that we come across.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. I wondered, Pankaj, earlier in your description of your relationship with John Chambers, you mentioned you're both grandfathers. And I wonder, you know, at a time when you are a grandfather, and at the time that you left Cisco, you had more than earned the right to take it a little slower, you know, take some more time for yourself. And that's the time when you were planning to build a company and get back into the fray, and if anything, be busier than ever. Talk a bit about the idea to start a company at this stage of your career. And actually also I'd be interested in your perspective on the advantages of doing so with such a wealth of experience. You've already talked, of course, about the ways in which the insights from past roles have played out through the creation of this, but talk about some of the advantages of starting a company at this phase of your career.
I have started a company back in late 80s, and I sold it. So I do have some experience from my younger days. Then I worked for a startup during the internet bubble time for a few years, and that was a great experience. Startup brings a very different energy, both physically and mentally. I had rather, in some sense, a little bit of a guilt of what I created and what I was part of creation in terms of complexity and what the industry was going through. So to me, life would not be fulfilled completely. I would not have felt great if I did not even attempt to carry on that legacy and to set the record straight and to do something to alleviate some of the difficulties that I encountered and what I narrated earlier in my conversation from listening to the customers to say, hey, it is my opportunity to do something different, something very innovative, leverage some of the latest and greatest market trends, and provide incredibly simplified design, and more importantly, the experiences both to the end user, to IT admins, and the customers through orchestrated service delivery, which is absolutely uninterrupted, that people can embrace. And at the end of the day, we also want to save them a ton of money. So, the goal is also to save a lot of total cost of ownership along the way. So it's a unique journey. And being inside that mega kitchen gave me a unique perspective on how the recipes get sometimes not quite to perfection, and how kitchen get messed up. So this is my opportunity to do it right and to clean it up. And and when I think back, and when I look back, and when I look at some of the visionaries, and I'm not even a fraction of anything close to them, but when I look at people like Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett, and Charlie Munger worked all the way till he passed away, and he was almost 100, and Warren Buffett is well in his 90s and still working. And there are some big luminaries like Larry Ellison and more. I mean, they're going very strong. So that gives me a lot of courage and encouragement to say, I need to continue this journey.
Yeah, phenomenal answer. I really appreciate that perspective, Pankaj. I wanted to close by asking you about the secrets to your success. As you pointed out, you've been an entrepreneur before, sold a business, run a significant percentage of Cisco's business, now started another organization that is thriving and growing at a rapid rate. As you reflect back on your career, what have been some of the difference makers that have allowed you to reach the heights that you have?
I have to say there are a few. I mean, there are many, but the few I would like to highlight. Number one, I was fortunate to be exposed to customers right from my very first job. I used to travel a lot for my first job because I worked for a mid-sized company. They didn't have that much expertise, and they could not afford to own IBM mainframe. So they used to send us out. They used to rent the time over the weekends in the evenings from major customers in New York City. And we would go and debug what we were developing. I developed a very unique perspective to listen to the customers and listen to the customers intently. And that stayed with me throughout my career. And that really created a lot of customer obsession that I have today. So I believe that has been a huge, huge factor in my life, because there are very few Steve Jobs and Bezos and Musks and the others. Majority of the people who innovate and who create the companies, they have to rely on market trends and listening to customers. So customer obsession has been front and center to me. Number two, in order to build, I have built some pretty nice teams along the way in my career, because to me, it is all about people at the end of the day. You are nobody without human beings, right? And because they are key to everything that you do. How do you attract, hire, and retain the best talent possible in your universe is very critical. And so I learned that along the way. How do you motivate them? How do you create an environment that they can succeed and they can thrive? And then I would say, last but not the least, probably some reflection on the character. And I'm very grateful to my parents. My parents were insanely humble, honest, and very high integrity human beings. And they instilled some of it rubbed off on me. And thank God it did. They always told me that you can look at the sky, but and look at the stars, but always keep your feet on the ground. And never, my mom always taught me that never ever stop learning, because the day you think that you are done, you truly are done. And so I always sought out to learn from my engineers at any level. Any opportunity I got, I would sit with them and ask them for, and I wanted to hear different and diverse opinions, because that's what makes us all sharper in life, right? So I think these are some of the values that carried me forward. And along with that, one last one that I can say is that I developed something which was that I would never ask my team to do something that I was never prepared to do, right? Never, ever. And that actually, that built a lot of loyalty in the team I was building. So, these are some of the lessons and some of the values that I was able to embody in my journey.
Pankaj, wonderful reflections, and I appreciate you offering those and for the broader conversation reflective of a remarkable career that is far from over. Thank you so much for taking time with me today, sharing your perspectives, talking a bit more about this exciting company, Nile, that you are scaling. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Peter.